This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives. This week I'm taking you to my favourite city church, that's St Bennet Paul's Wharf, the Welsh Church, and my aim is to help you fall in love with it as much as I have. Helping me to win you over is Signor Hoffus from the Friends of the City Churches, and later you'll hear from the vicar and Erin Glynn and some of the congregants from the church. But first of all, what about its name?
St. Bennet isn't actually an individual, it's St. Benedict, and he is, of course, the founder of Western monasticism.
And Paul's Wharf, what does that refer to?
In one of the many wharfs which line the Thames on this side of the river. That one is due south of St. Paul's Cathedral, and the actual wharf was owned by the Dean and Canons of St. Paul's.
Can you also tell me a little bit about when the first church was built here, if we know?
Oh, the agreed date is 1111 as the first reference, and that seems to be a legitimate one. There are a few other dates that circulate with other churches that turn out to be associated with forgeries, but that one seems to be respectable. And it does show up as a forlorn little tower virtually on the river in the first Elizabethan two-dimensional maps, which give you an idea of what the physical city looked like. So it probably was a relatively small church because this was very valuable land at that time.
Mm. When was it replaced by this one, and why?
Well, the Great Fire of London was a remarkable catalyst for architecture in the 17th century. We know this church certainly was burned to ground-ish level. And the interesting feature here is that the monument to Inigo Jones, the great architect and theatre designer, was in this church. And it was recorded 4 years after the fire, which suggests that there were fairly substantial standing remains still at least 4 years after the fire.
And what are the other connections of Inigo Jones with this church?
Well, his family seems to be local, amongst it, which is interesting. We don't know where they came from. We're pretty sure he's Welsh, although there's no evidence. And Inigo is a Spanish name.
And the family worshipped here, married here.
Seems very likely because his parents were buried here as well. So that strongly suggests that it would have been a family connection. And this is was a Welsh area of the city, historically doing wool, coal, slate, and then, of course, laterally in the 19th century, when the trains come in, a lot of dairy. The Welsh really ran the dairy business of London, and they were all over town with the dairy trade. But if you look at the monuments on the walls of this church, there are many Welsh names going right back to the refounding of the church after the fire. So it was completed about 1684, and in 1686, a man named Llewellyn Jenkins gave the fantastic communion table here, and he later became a Lord Mayor of London. So obviously there are wealthy Welsh connections going right back.
My name is Aneirin Glynn, and I'm, well, what's called the Guild Vicar, because this is a guild church,
yeah.
And so therefore I'm the Guild Vicar of St Bennet's.
This is the Metropolitan Welsh Church.
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, there used to be five Welsh-speaking Church of England Anglican churches in London, but over the years they've closed one by one, and this is the remaining Welsh-speaking Anglican church.
Tell me about your Welsh heritage.
So I'm born and bred Welsh. I was born in Cardiff and with a Welsh-speaking family, and grew up there, went to Welsh-speaking schools. And I was in Wales till I was 18.
You found yourself inside St Bennet. There are a few Welsh connections here. What does it feel like doing a service in this church?
Well, it's a great building, and obviously people come because of that.
Yeah.
And it is lovely to be steeped in the history. I've been here 7 years now, and so it's therefore feels like home. I mean, it's where I guess I've got used to feeling quite Welsh because we speak Welsh. And obviously my visitors come from Wales. So it's a little Welsh island, you know, here in the centre of London. And it's wonderful to be able to learn about Christ in the Welsh language, but with plenty of visitors who don't understand the language, but I think follow what's happening.
The congregations seem quite varied. You have some elderly people,
yeah,
who
look like they may have been coming here for a long time. Yeah, and some younger people, young families. So it's a broad
It's a real mix. That's a real joy of being at St Helens. And I think we all enjoy that.
Can you tell me about how the Welsh ended up getting this in their hands?
When in the 1870s there was a move to demolish many churches because they were just redundant by the 1870s, there just weren't people living in the city to make them financially viable. This one was offered to the Welsh community, and in 1879 it officially became a Welsh church.
I came to London about, gosh, it must be, I think seven and a bit years ago, and obviously because I'm born and brought up in Cardiff, was really keen to kind of meet Welsh Christians and be a part of a kind of a Welsh ministry in London. And I think, I mean, the thing I love about it is, I think partly with the kind of hiraeth, so like longing for home, it's really nice to kind of meet with Welsh people.
It feels very welcoming, partly because of the singing. I could hear you singing. Yeah. Is this something that is important to you, the kind of the music in the church?
I absolutely love this. I love singing. I think, and maybe from being Welsh, where kind of, I guess, music is quite a big part of the culture, I think the words, the hymns are absolutely amazing as well. But have grown to absolutely love the history. And it's amazing to see, I think, people come to the church for so many different reasons, the history being a big part of that. And it's great to be able to welcome them into kind of our church family because of those amazing connections. So it's a very special place.
Back to the church being rebuilt after the fire by Christopher Wren.
Well, it is a Wren period church, and Wren and his office supervised the rebuilding of all these churches. However, there's a great deal of circumstantial evidence to suggest that some of them, and this one in particular, had the hand of his good friend Robert Hooke. Hooke made most of the site drawings, most of the site visits. Wren was just so overwhelmed with work, he didn't obviously attend to every detail in every church. And it seems that his trusted buddy Hooke had a very strong hand in this one.
So Christopher Wren / Robert Hooke were involved in the rebuilding of the church. It escaped damage in the Blitz, is that right?
Well, this church actually suffered most in August 1939, just before the start of the Second World War. A gas main blew up across the street and knocked a building to rubble, as gas main explosions tend to do, and blew out all the windows of the church. And then, basically, nothing much happened on this side of the street for the rest of the war. There was an arson attack in 1971 on the organ, and that was repaired, and the organ was moved around. But the organ here is practically on wheels. It has moved a few times in the history of the church, and the repair was nicely made up.
My name's Jonathan Curry, and I suppose I'm the organist here, would be my official title, which I've been doing for about 2 years now.
What's special about this organ, if
anything? Well, surprisingly, it's in quite good condition. I think a lot of old churches that may not have been filled with congregations for periods of time, you might expect the organ to be a bit ropey and dusty and squeaky and out of tune, but this one's in quite good nick, and I think it makes quite a good amount of sound for this size of building, so it's quite good fun to play. So I got invited to do this because I know an Aaron, and I think one Sunday was short of an organist, so rang me up and said, what are you doing tomorrow morning? So, oh, well, I guess I'm playing the organ for you. It might come across as a slightly odd setup for a start, everything being in Welsh, and I don't speak a word of that, so that is a bit strange.
But what do you think about that?
I think I'm glad the English is printed alongside it, put it that way. But it's a nice family of people, really. Everybody knows each other, and everybody gets along really well, and so it's a good sort of community feel. So I suppose the amusing thing about my job is that an Aaron says something in Welsh, which I think means, and now we'll sing the next hymn, and then has to say it in English, otherwise I have no idea when to start playing.
Of its design. Can you tell me a little bit about, first of all, the exterior of the church? What would we see if we were standing outside?
Remarkably, for a City of London church, it's actually striking outside. There was public money went into the building of the churches after the fire, so there wasn't a lot lavished on exterior details. Hence, they all look quite plain outside, bar the odd one or two, and this is the striking exception. It looks, as everyone says, very Dutch. It's brick outside. It has coins, which it basically looks like it's made with Lego. Very interesting architecturally, and an absolute little jewel. And the one thing to be said for the atrocious 1970s one-way system is that it does now stand so isolated that you can get a very good look at it from all sides.
Yeah.
It would just be easier if you could actually approach it on foot without taking your life in your hands. But we look forward to the next round of urban regeneration around here. I'm sure it will do this church more justice. But it is between two major infrastructure projects, Blackfriars Station and the Millennium Bridge.
Mm.
Now, all they need to do is connect those two bits, and St. Bennet's will be the jewel in that passage.
Other notable sites nearby include the College of Arms on the other side of the road. Can you tell me if the college has any connection with the church?
You only have to walk into the church to see that the place is just crawling with heraldry. Every surface at every height, there are coats of arms and shields and devices and monuments to past heralds and all their wonderful titles. You read the memorials and many of them are heralds and sometimes more proud of their heraldry than anything else in their lives, even though some of them were serious overachievers. The heraldry is absolutely the thing they love to be remembered for. And of course, they do have services here.
Other than the College of Arms, who are connected, are there any other institutions or organisations nearby which have an association with this church that don't exist anymore? In other words, Doctors' Commons. Can you tell me about that?
Yes. Yeah. Well, this was also the most convenient church for this extraordinary legal conflation called Doctors' Commons, which housed five separate jurisdictions of civil and ecclesiastical law, including even the Admiralty. So a very peculiar range of cases came into Doctors' Commons, and you had to be specially licensed to practice in Doctors' Commons. It was absolutely Jarndyce versus Jarndyce for centuries. It started out well, and it just got mired in the worst intricacies of British law for a very long time. But one of the things the Doctors' Commons fellows did was adjudicate on marriages, legitimacy, bastardy, separation, and wills, so all the family dramas. And one of the things, if you wanted a license to get married as opposed to reading the banns in church, you came to Doctors' Commons.
And as a result of this, the church was used a lot for marriages.
They got a lot of weddings.
Do you know how many?
Well, it would be difficult to tell because they're mixed up with the ordinary weddings, but one interesting little test is looking them up in the Dictionary of National Biography.
Okay.
And if you look up Bennet Wharf alone, there's 300 entries in the Dictionary of National Biography that have a connection with this church.
Yeah.
And a few of them are buried here, and an awful lot of them were married here.
And do we know of anybody special who got married here?
Well, the most famous, of course, is Henry Fielding, the novelist. And Henry had his second marriage here. He's, of course, the author of Tom Jones and other blockbusters. And also Susan Sontleaver, the lady dramatist, one of the Afro-Ben
generation
of lady writers. There were far more of them than many people remember now. And of course, Della Rivera Manley, the other great lady playwright, is buried here. She had a very adventurous life, but obviously she reconciled to the church by the end of it because she has a honking great ledger stone right in the aisle of the church as her memorial. And she's praised to the skies in it, and all the other, sometimes occasionally dicey adventures of her life are quietly glossed over. But they were all amazing characters to have been women writers at all in that period.
So this is a Restoration period, Charles II.
And early era. Georgian, yes.
Speaking of playwrights, do you know if there's any Shakespearean connection with the church?
Well, he must have known it because he would have walked past it all the time. The indoor theater at Blackfriars was more or less across the street, and the easiest way to get to the Globe and the South Bank generally would have been to just basically take a boat across the river. And he does literally mention this play by name, this church by name, in Twelfth Night, when Feste is trying to extort tips from the Duke. And he gets one coin, and and he asks for another, and then he makes a little play on the triple bells of St. Bennet's Church, hoping to get a third coin, and he name-checks St. Bennet's.
Yeah,
now, all we need is a great big sign at the Globe saying, cross Millennium Bridge, turn left, there's St. Bennet's.
They also need to put on a production of Twelfth Night soon. Are there any particular features inside the church that you think people need to be aware of or to notice?
Well, it is just a lovely little box church, and much of its original character, it has been very little messed around. The pews have been cut down, as they have been almost everywhere. Mm. The most interesting thing to emerge recently is through the work of a woman named Crystal Hollis, who is doing her doctoral thesis on medieval graffiti, and has discovered an amazing amount of graffiti in this church. So, if you come in and go to the choir stalls and look under the facing woodwork, there's all kinds of carving of little tokens, but there are little compass marks and spectacles and people's names and dates and numbers. And even in the body of the church, a couple of little corners where you just wouldn't be noticed with your penknife during a boring sermon. Sure enough, there's little bits of graffiti carved into the wood there.
How incredible.
And it was either meant as a kind of sympathetic magic by the craftsmen, or sometimes just the imps in the choir and the boys' school. But there's certainly an amazing amount of it here in St. Bennet's.
Well, I didn't know that. And I love not only that there is some medieval graffiti, but that somebody's actually doing a little thesis or a big thesis on this. I mean,
and it's absolutely fascinating, the stuff she's found. And she does have a website on it. And once you get your eye in, you can see these things all over old buildings, particularly in darkened corners. So that's why the good Lord gave us iPhones with torches on them, because you can crawl around and look and discover this stuff all over the place.
Now, I didn't come in here today expecting you to tell me this little bit of information that I was clueless about. Can you show me?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's have a look.
You got an iPhone?
Yep. Yeah, I've got an iPhone. I'm really curious.
The best stash is this room here. And if you just put the light on that, and you'll begin to see them.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. There's this.
The all the way down here is just on both levels. There's stuff, and sometimes it's just people's initials and dates, and sometimes it's little figures.
If you were to sum up the church in a nutshell, in terms of the atmosphere, maybe of the place, what would you say?
Well, it's still charmingly a very homely church. It does have a real parish church quality to it. Some of them are quite grand, and you can see the men in their livery companies and their furs historically wandering through in their historic costume. Here, you really get the feeling of a family parish, and it just does have the feeling of the kind of church you could imagine coming to every week and being a part of a community.
What attracted you to the church? Why did you come?
Well, first of all, being Welsh, of which I'm fortunately very fluent in reading, writing, and speaking.
Did you grow up in Wales?
Yes.
And where?
A place called Bwcheli. Up to the age of four and a half, yes. Didn't know any English at all. So I had to learn English.
When did you come to London?
1960, in February. I never went back to North Wales.
Do you miss North Wales?
I go back as often as I can.
What do you like about coming here every Sunday?
Well, generally the whole congregation is so friendly, yes. You know, and you just feel like you're coming home. Yeah, it's so comfortable, yeah.
There's tea and biscuits. And
oh, lovely. Thanks very much.
Ofyn i mi gymryd rhan yn yr rhaglen.
What does that mean?
Thank you for letting me taking part in your programme.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.